Blog Talk Radio.
I am officially retiring from the NFL and Green Bay Packers.
And here we go. To the 40, the 30, the 20. Touchdown, Prince.
Let me tell you what happened. I'm going to get a drop like a sack of potatoes. What crawl on the cracker later?
Freeze.
Another beautiful Thursday night and another edition of the 7-1 Sports Wrap. I'm sitting here watching NBA on TNT. This is game two. Was it 26-18 LA over OKC? Make that 28-18. Oklahoma City's doing good. This is Derek Fisher's return back to the Staples Center. So I guess the Lakers are getting better with Raymond Sessions at the point. Fisher, I believe, is in the game right now. So everybody likes him. But let's get into other top news. 2 days ago, the Dodgers finally got sold after Frank McCourt was going bankrupt and he needed to sell the team. It sold for $2 billion. Magic Johnson was the notable part of the group that bought the franchise. And I was wondering why Mark Cuban didn't buy it. The owner of the Mavericks, he has tons of money, but now I know why. It's a lot of money to spend. The Dodgers sold for $2 billion. It's crazy. Last week, we were talking about the Saints, and obviously their bounty was finally punishment was handed out to the coaches. Nothing further has happened with that, but there is news on their next coach. They kind of need somebody just to fill in for a year because Sean Payton will be back next year, but they just need somebody for a year, and Bill Parcells looks like he might be the next coach. He hasn't agreed to it, although he said he would consider coming back if offered. Spot, and honestly, everything just kind of points to him coming, so we'll see what happens with that. The Heat acquired Ronnie Turiaf. He's been in the league for a little bit, but he's in game shape. He's fast, he's quick, he's strong. I mean, he's hitting shots, he's doing good. So another piece, he's sharing some time with Joel Anthony as a center role. Last week, we kind of touched on this, obviously, all the big moves already in the NFL. I call it the QB shuffle. Just to sum it all up, Peyton went to the Broncos. Tebow is now a Jet. Matt Flynn is a Seahawk. Andrew Luck's going to be a Colt. RG3 is a Redskin, pretty much. He's locked in there. And David Garrard went to the Dolphins. And Kyle Orton is a Cowboy. The only other piece is Ryan Tannehill. See what he shows up in the draft. They predicted him going number 17. I think the Dolphins will probably get him at number 8. We'll see what happens with that. My bracket's pretty much busted. I mean, I had Kentucky going all the way. They're still in it. The Final Four is set for both men's and women's. In men's, it's going to be Louisville versus Kentucky and Ohio State versus Kansas. Kentucky, the one seed, only one seed left. So some good games going on. In the women's, all of them are number one seeds. You got Stanford. It's Baylor and UConn versus Notre Dame. So nobody higher than one seed is in the Final Four for women's. Baylor the favorite, but Stanford obviously a really good team. And obviously they're all really good teams. They're number ones. So it should be interesting there. The championship will be, I believe, Monday. Saturday is when the Final Four will take place. Both games are going to be on Saturday. Louisville and Kentucky, number 4 Louisville, number 1 Kentucky. will tip off 6:09 p.m. on CBS, and then 8:49 p.m. it is number 2 Ohio State and number 2 Kansas facing off. So that'll be it for the Final Four, and if I'm not mistaken, doesn't say, but I believe Monday will be the championship. It doesn't say on here, but yeah, we'll, you know, just obviously look for it. Sunday will be the Final Four for women's at 6:30 on ESPN, Connecticut, Notre Dame, and at ESPN 8:30 p.m. it'll be Stanford and Baylor, and their championship, I guess, would probably be Tuesday, I'm guessing. So that's just your college basketball. Those are that's your schedule for you guys. Some news about Steve Nash. I heard earlier this year that, you know, he was gonna not, you know, it's the final year of his contract, and he was saying that he wasn't gonna opt out and he wasn't gonna leave the team. He wanted to stick it out to the end and see what the team could do. He says, you know, if there's not a improvement in the team, that he doesn't want to return. I don't blame him. I think he's one of the hardest working individuals in the NBA. I mean, he's getting up there in age, but he still lights out. He's leading the NBA in assists by a lot. And I don't blame him. I mean, he's working hard, but there's no effort by anybody else. It's hard to really commit for another few years. Just what I read on ESPN, LeBron and the Heat was a possible destination for Steve Nash. I have really mixed emotions about that. I don't want any more talent on my team. I mean, I like the team we have, and I want to win. I don't want it to get ridiculous. I've always hated teams like the Lakers and the Yankees. I'm not trying to be like that and win a title. On the other hand, I think Steve Nash is one of my favorite players of all time. I love his work ethic. Speaking of point guards, Derek Fisher, like I mentioned, he's now a Thunder after being traded to the Houston Rockets. They waived him, and now he is they bought out his contract, and now he's a Thunder. Not starting anymore, but he's still playing some minutes, backup role, backing up Westbrook at the point guard. And like I said, he is playing the Lakers right now, so it's his first trip back to the Staples Center. Obviously, kind of the same as, you know, when Odom got traded to Dallas, and when he came back, you know, there's no bad feelings. They didn't do anything. They didn't leave on their own. They wouldn't have left if he was up to them. But it's all good there. It's a good thing Fisher at least went to a better team, at least. I know he wanted to finish up in L.A., but if anything, now he has a legit shot to make a title run. Although the Lakers, I think, definitely have it. But the Thunder clearly are the favorites right there in the West. Speaking of the Lakers, Andrew Bynum, which, it will not be in my top three plays later on. But he, two nights ago, shot a three-pointer and was benched. I don't know. I mean, I understand where he was located. It was kind of in rhythm. But as a center and being Andrew Bynum, the thought or actions of shooting a three-pointer should never cross his mind. So he shot it and just shanked off the right side. He didn't hustle down the floor, and Mike Brown basically benched him for the rest of the night. But he's back in action and doing well today. Men's NITs ended tonight. Stanford beating Minnesota 75-51. It's kind of root for the old Golden Gophers. But Stanford wins. Interesting, Stanford actually got a pep talk from Ray Lewis earlier. It was debated, and I couldn't agree with him more. One, why wasn't he in the women's locker room where Stanford is number one in the actual tournament and, you know, the Final Four? And two, Ray Lewis attended UM, not Stanford, so why is he in their locker room? Really made no sense, but apparently it paid off, and Stanford is your NIT champions. Like always, we're moving into a little bit of hockey. It's getting down to crunch time. Not too many games left. And as usual, I keep my eye on the Florida Panthers. Panthers currently still in the third seed because of that division lead. Like I said many times, the top three seeds are awarded to the top three division. So you could have a horrible division. As long as you're leading it, you're guaranteed a third spot. The Panthers aren't horrible. A win-loss record is 37-24, but in hockey, it doesn't work like that. It works in points. You get 2 points for a win. Obviously, no points for loss, and I believe 1 point for an overtime or shootout win. Now, because Florida's had a lot of overtimes and not as many losses, 37 wins is not that much, but they have 89 points, which is 3 above their division chaser, I guess you would say, of Washington, which is the only team they're worried about right now. Washington's second in the division in the Southeast, and they're currently not even in the playoffs, so big difference there. Florida doesn't need to worry about anything else but Washington right now. I've been checking the scoreboards. Florida did lose in overtime, and Washington won in overtime. So Washington gets 1 point. So they have a 3-point lead now. I still like their odds. Every show I've had talking about them, they've still been a third seed. There's only about a week left, so keep an eye on them. Here's your standings. 3 teams have clinched in the East. The Rangers with 105 points leading the way. Pittsburgh Penguins have 100 points, and the Philadelphia Flyers with 98 points. They're all clinched and heading to the playoffs. Your 2 other division winners are leaders, I should say. Number 2 seed Boston Bruins, 94 points, and Florida Panthers at number 3 with 89 points. At number 6, you have New Jersey, 94. Ottawa, number 7 with 88, and Buffalo with 86. Washington at number 9, looking up at the playoffs, also have 86 points. They obviously don't have the tiebreaker, so we will see who ends up with that final 8 spot. Like I said, there's still a lot of time left. But so far, they're winning the division, so they have the third seed of the teams possible. Winnipeg, 8 points behind Washington. Tampa, Carolina, New York all have 77. So they're still fighting, but really, realistically, they don't have a chance. In the West, St. Louis tied with the Rangers for the top spot in the NHL. They have 105 points. They've clinched. Vancouver, 103 points. They've also clinched a playoff berth. And your other division winner, leader, I should say, is Dallas with 89 points. Detroit at number 4, they've clinched with 97 points. And Nashville at number 5, they've also clinched with 96 points. At number 6, Chicago with 93. Number 7, Los Angeles with 88. And at number 8, San Jose also with 88 points. They have picture now. Still, these 3 teams have a shot. Phoenix with 1 point behind San Jose. Colorado, 2 points behind, and Calgary, 3 points behind. All those 3 still have a shot, so we'll see how the Western playoff picture pans out here. I'll definitely get more into it next week. And that is pretty much all I really wanted to say about hockey. Let's move on to the NBA. Miami beating Dallas 106-85 at home. The Hornets and the Trailblazers, it's in Portland, halftime. Hornets are up 54-51. And like this, I said before, the game going on TNT, LA and Oklahoma City, the Lakers, that is, not the Clippers. And LA is actually taking it to them. It's 32-26 now. Fisher actually just made a nice shot, so it's good to see him playing well. And just really quickly going into my standings, not too much has changed. Miami's kind of just in the middle there. They're not going to move from 1 to 1 or to 3 anytime soon. Chicago does have the first seed, and they are the first team in the NBA to have clinched the playoff berth. Charlotte Bobcats are the first team to officially not make the playoffs with 7 wins so far. They're 7-41. I haven't really said their name too much, but yeah, that's pretty bad. I know there's only 66 games, but not even hitting double digits yet. Chicago, yeah, number 1 seed so far, 41-11. Now they've played 3 more games than the Heat. So it says they're 3.5 back. The Heat are 36-13. But it really all is the all-important loss column. The Heat can't control how many games they play, but they can control the loss column. We're 2 back in the loss column, so we're basically a game behind. We do have 2 more meetings with Chicago, though. That's what I heard. So if that is true, then, you know, if we win both those games and we control our own destiny, I'm not worried about it. Chicago actually has been playing very well. 2 and 10, and they had a rope for a couple, so scared me a little bit, but I'm very confident in the Heat. The Heat, 36-13, number two seed. Orlando, 8.5 back of the Chicago, 32-19. They're playing pretty well. They're 6-4 in the last 10. The rest of the Eastern Conference is like this. Philadelphia, leading their division. They are 28-12. They're 12 games back in first place. Indiana, number 5, 30-20. Atlanta is 30-22. Boston, 28-22. And New York, I know it kind of flip-flops between New York and Milwaukee, but New York currently has the 8th spot in the East at 26-25. Now, as you noticed, Philadelphia and Boston are tied. And the NBA is similar to NHL. For a different winner, you have a top spot, but it's actually you're in the top four. Meaning, in the NHL, if you're in the same division as a division winner, and say you're number two in your division, that doesn't mean, I mean, you could have the second best record in that conference, but any but you're going to have the best number four, like a four seed. The top three division winners are going to have the 1-3. In the NBA, you're guaranteed a top four spot. So as you see, Orlando is actually number three, but they're not a division winner. They're behind Miami. Philadelphia gets the fourth spot. So basically, you take the division winners and then the next best team, put them in a pool, and whoever the top, however they line up record-wise, that's your top four. But Philly and Boston are tied. So I know I've been saying Boston's been number seven, number eight all year. They're actually right there to be in the top four. So look for Boston. They're playing pretty good lately. And they're playing pretty good. New York 7-3 in the last 10. New York's 8-2 in the last 10. And Boston is 7-3, both with three-game winning streaks. So we'll see what happens with the Eastern Conference as the season winds down. In the West, no surprise, Oklahoma City is the top dog, 38-12. San Antonio still hanging in there, only 2.5 back at 35-14. The Lakers are number three, but they're 7 games back of Oklahoma City. They can make it 6 games with a win, but I don't think they're going to catch them. They're 31-19. The Clippers are number four, 29-21. Memphis at 27-21 are number five. Dallas, 29-23 is number six. Utah, 27-24 is number seven. Houston with the same record is number eight. Phoenix is 2 games back in the playoffs. Minnesota, 2.5. Portland, 3.5. So those three teams still have a chance. I really am rooting for Minnesota. I think Kevin Love, speaking of the NBA, I think he'll never win the MVP as far as, you know, this year, but I think he should win the MVP. He's been that whole team, but not winning enough games for him to win that. Looks like it'll be either between LeBron or Durant. I personally would give it to Durant. What Washington is, what the Thunder are doing is just incredible in the West. And Durant is just, I mean, I know Westbrook's helping him out a lot, but with the Heat, the Heat are a much deeper team than OKC. And OKC is just, they're doing a little bit better than the Heat. And Durant is just a scoring machine. And just really quickly, I'm not going to run through all the stats in the NBA, but it's good to keep up with it. Just your points updated with the top five. Kobe Bryant, 28.3 points. Kevin Durant, right behind him with 27.8 points per game. And look at this. Kevin Love, 26.6 points per game. He's third in the NBA in scoring. He's ahead of LeBron. This is probably a fraction. LeBron, 26.5. And Russell Westbrook, actually in the top five now, with 24.2 points per game. So interesting right there. I mean, you have Kobe Bryant, who's, you know, at kind of the end of his prime. He's definitely a step off his prime, but he's, you know, Durant winning it twice in a row. And like I said, Kevin Love, just what he's doing is amazing. Nobody would have thought he'd be this good. LeBron James, obviously, no surprise. And Russell Westbrook, that just goes to show you how good that OKC is. And, you know, Westbrook is definitely helping him out. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, obviously the top scoring duo, the top scoring duo in the NBA. LeBron and D. Wade is number two. Rebounds, obviously these two are always going to be in the top two. Dwight Howard, 14.5 a game. Kevin Love, 13.9. And Andrew Bynum is third with 12.2 points per game. And like I said, in assists, Steve Nash, Rondo's actually narrowing the gap. Steve Nash, 11.2 assists per game, and Rajon Rondo, 10.8. Chris Paul, 8.8 points per game. Chandler's still beasting it in the field goal percentage. He's shooting nearly 58%. Nobody's even close. Mike Miller's still in the prime percentage, but he hasn't played in a while. But he's still leading at 49.3%. Jamal Crawford leading the NBA in free throws with 92.4%. Ray Allen right behind him. Blocks, this is actually pretty cool. Serge Ibaka from OKC, 3.3 blocks per game. McGee from Denver, 2.4. Dwight Howard, 2.2. DeAndre Jordan from the Clippers, 2.1. And Andrew Bynum with 2. So those are your basic stat leaders so far in the NBA. And I just thought it'd be kind of fun. I actually am it's kind of a crossover fantasy now. I'm in the playoffs in my NBA, and then that's going to end. And then I have baseball coming up. It was actually, I believe I was third seed. So I'll see if I have a chance. And the commissioner, there's 8 teams. I had 6 spots, actually. Top 2 get a bye. And then the bottom 4 play it out to play the bye week winners. I was third. And here's how my team looks. Point guards, I have Steve Nash, DJ Augustine, Chris Paul. Shooting guards, Kemba Walker, Joe Johnson, Trevor Ariza, which I kind of... team, power forwards and centers, I have Carlos Boozer, Dirk Nowitzki, Joakim Noah, Andrew Bynum, Chris Kamen, and Tyson Chandler. So it's not too bad. I think I finished like 8-4 or something. But good luck to the Zen Man. I hate paying out when I'm the commish, so it's good to get the first spot. I am the reigning champion. I won last year. I fell short in fantasy baseball though, so hopefully I can have some redemption. My draft is the 31st, I believe. So I hope I do good in that. And since I always talk about Thursday's games, sure, I won't say not important. Usually, these are good matchups. Friday, tomorrow, you have 7 o'clock, Heat at Raptors. 7 o'clock, you have Philadelphia at Washington. Denver at Charlotte. At 7:30, you have the Knicks at the Hawks. At 7:30, you have the Bucks at the Cavaliers. 8 o'clock on ESPN, you have the Mavericks at the Magic. 8, you have the Pistons at the Bulls. You have the Grizzlies at the Rockets. Celtics at Timberwolves, which I'm calling it right now, T-Wolves win. At 9 o'clock, you have the Kings at the Jazz. 10:30 on ESPN, the Trailblazers at the Clippers. And at 10:30, the Nets and the Warriors face off.
And here we go. First snap of the overtime. The Broncos have been in 3 overtime games this year. They won them all. Got him at the 40. It's Thomas at the 50. Stiffer got him 3 to the 30. To the 20. Thomas to the 10. Stiffer's going off in New England. They win it on the first play of overtime.
Thank you.
time for the Southern Sports Wrap Stat of the Week. And here are the stats I came up for you guys today. I already mentioned it, but I don't want to say it's weird because, obviously, looking at Final Four, it should be the four number ones, but you just don't see it that often. Final Four, women's college basketball, all four teams are number one seeds. So it's not interesting as of who's going to upset who. It's kind of just let's see all these powerhouses go at it and see who comes out up top. So it's kind of cool to see it that way. If Baylor wins the tourney, they're going to be 40-0 this season. That's never happened to anybody, women's or men's. Durant and Westbrook scored 40-plus each last week. I believe that was a Saturday night. That was a huge game. Was it 149 to 142 overtimes, I think it was, against the T-Wolves. And that was the second time they did that this year, which is an NBA record. So that was a record that happened twice in 1 year. Just the fact that it happened is just crazy. 85 points they accumulated. Some teams don't even score that much in a game. In the same game, Kevin Love had a career-high 51 points. And the following game, he actually had 30 and 20, which that was a record also. And not to be overshadowed, J.J. Barea had a triple-double in that game as well. So just crazy stats. So those are my stats of the week for you guys. MLB season actually already started. It started last night versus the Mariners and the Athletics. It was played in Japan, I believe. Athletics won, so they're the first team to win a game this year. But I thought it would be interesting to talk about the Marlins. I work at Sports Fanatic, and I was getting a couple questions here and there. Who are the backgrounds? Where are these guys from? I really didn't know. You know, I could sit there and tell you the lineup and the positions, but I didn't know anything about the players. So I'm going to start off with the pitching staff. Let's talk about Josh Johnson. Clearly their ace. He's born on January 31st, 1984. He's 28 years old. He was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He actually bats left but throws right. He's actually got some pop on his bat. He's hit a few homers. He's 6'7", 250 pounds. He did not attend college. His career record is 123 and 113, all for the Marlins. And his best status is the ERA, 2.98 ERA. He's one of the best in baseball at that. Let's hope the extra workload this year, or the extra help, is going to minimize the workload for him. Clearly, the entire team was on his back last year and the year before, and you know he doesn't make it all the way through. So he should be better this year. Pitching staff, got Ricky Nolasco. His real name is Carlos. He was born 12/13/1982. 29 years old. He was born in Corona, California. His background is Mexican, so he's Mexican-American. He's 6'2", 230 pounds. He bats right, throws right. He did not attend college either. He's played 6 years in Florida. His record is 64-51 with a 4.50 ERA. And their new addition, Mark Burley, born March 23rd, 1979, age 33. He was born in St. Charles, Missouri. He attended Jefferson College in Missouri. He bats left, throws left. He is 6'2", 230. His stats, he's a career 169, 119, 383 ERA with 27 complete games and 8 shutouts. He's played all 12 years in Chicago White Sox. And next was Anibal Sanchez. He's played pretty good lately. He does have a no-hitter in his career. He was born February 27, 1984. And Maracay, Venezuela. He bats right, throws right. 6 feet tall, 205 pounds. He debuted June 25th, 2006. His career stats, he's played 6 years for Florida in the majors. Career 39-38 with a 3.72 ERA. He's had 4 shutouts, 6 complete games, and like I said, one of those was a no-hitter. And your final pitcher of the rotation, Carlos Zambrano. Born June 1st, 1981. He's from Puerto Cabello in Venezuela. He's actually a switch hitter, and he throws right. He's 6'5", 270 pounds. He's played 11 years for the Cubs. He's a career 125, 81, pitcher, 3.60 ERA. Obviously, he's a fireball, likes to get mouthy and wild, but hopefully we have a coach who could be more wild than him and keep him in line, so we'll see what happens with him. I'm not sure what order they're going to be in. I know Josh Johnson will be the ace. I would assume Nolasco will be number two. It could be Burley. Either way, they're going to have a lot of help for Josh Johnson, so I'm pretty happy about that. And let's move into my hitters. Starting with Gabby Sanchez, born September 2nd, 1983. He's 28 years old. He's just been in Florida his whole life, born in Miami. He bats right, throws right. He's 6'1", 225, graduated from the University of Miami. He's played 4 years with Florida. He's got 40 career homers, 3 triples, 74 doubles, and a 269 average. Not too bad. He actually had his first All-Star game last year. He was the Marlins' only representative. Jose Reyes, our shortstop. He's born on June 11th, 1983. 20 years old. He is 6'1", 200 pounds. He was born in Villa Gonzalez, Dominican Republic. He bats switch hitter. He is a right-handed thrower. His career, with 9 years with the Mets, he has 81 home runs, 99 triples, 222 doubles, 1,300 hits in total, a 292 average. So not too bad. Moving on to Hanley Ramirez. He's born December 23rd, 1983 in Samana, Dominican Republic. He bats and throws right-handed. He did not attend college, and his career stats are for Florida. Yeah, he actually, in 2005, he had 2 games with the Boston Red Sox before being traded in the big Josh Beckett deal, but he has played 6 years with the Marlins. A career 306 hitter, 134 home runs, 24 triples, 214 doubles. He has a total of 1,016 hits. He's been the Marlins captain since he's been in the league. He won Rookie of the Year. He gets a little upset sometimes. This is my personal experience watching him play. He's been in the All-Star game every year pretty much, except for last year. And he is now third base instead of shortstop. Not saying they're not 2 different positions, but still require the same skill set, so he should be fine over there. He was a little upset that he had to move to third base. I guess I can kind of understand that maybe, you know, you've been shortstop for the Marlins, you've been the star. One guy comes in and you're asked to move, but you tell me you're going to bring any guy to help me out, I'll take it. He's been injured a lot too, and for the same reasons as Josh Johnson, he's just trying to carry everything on his back. Now he's got some help. So finally we can do something this year. Next we have Logan Morrison, born in Kansas City, Missouri. Born August 25th, 1987. He's only 24 years old. He bats and throws left. 6'3", 235. He graduated from Maple Woods Community College in Missouri. He's played 2 years in Florida, 25 homers, 11 triples, 45 doubles, a 259 average. So not bad. He's been a little off and on, but now I see why. He's only 24 years old, so he should be fine. He's definitely getting a starting job this year, so hopefully he can be consistent all year long, because he's definitely got a lot of talent. Checking out Omar Infante, playing second base. Born December 26, 1981, in Puerto La Cruz, Venezuela. Omar bats right, throws right. He did not attend college. He's been a few places. He played for Detroit. Looks like 6 years being a major leaguer. He played for the Braves for 1 year. 3 years, excuse me. And he played last year for Florida. Career totals, a 275 average. He's actually got 52 career home runs, 32 triples, 153 doubles, and he's got 869 career hits. Let's check out Emilio Bonifacio, born April 23rd, 1985, 26 years old. Bonifacio bats switch hitting. He's a right-handed thrower. He's 5'11", 200 pounds. He is from Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. His career, 6 home runs, 21 triples, 50 doubles, and a 269 average. And he's played 3 years with Florida. And my favorite player who I just found out he has a different name, is Mike Stanton. But this isn't a different name like Leo Nunez. Mike Stanton, who has been his, I mean, that's what everybody's calling him. Has his full name is Giancarlo Cruz Michael Stanton. So we all call him Mike Stanton, but actually they use the word, they use his name, Giancarlo, on ESPN every day, so I don't know what he wants to go by. He was born on November 8th, 1989. That's right, he was born after me. So I am older than Mike Stanton, but he can hit the ball about 300 feet farther. This guy's a beast. He throws right, he hits right. 6'5", 250. He did not attend college either. This guy is just an animal. He was predicted on ESPN to hit fourth best in home runs. I think they had Prince Fielder above him. I think, honestly, Mike Stanton has a legit shot of being up there with the best right now. He might have, I mean, he has the potential to have the most home runs this year, but definitely a top five. I think he has over 40. So it should be interesting. Like I said, 22 years old. He's played 2 years with the Marlins. Career totals, 56 home runs, 6 triples, 51 doubles, and a 261 average. I can tell you how the lineup probably will look, but I don't know exactly. But I know Mike Stanton will be either fourth or fifth hitter. They should have him at cleanup, but with the addition of Reyes, Bonifacio should be leading off. With Hanley, I don't know. He could kind of go anywhere. The last starter is John Buck. He's a catcher, date of birth July 7th, 1980, 31 years old, from Camaro, Wyoming. No college. He's 6'3", 230. Yeah, his career, he's played 6 years with Kansas City, one with San Diego, one with Florida, 106 home runs, 144 doubles, 241 average. He is going to be our main catcher. And there are two more players that I wanted to discuss. One is Chris Coughlin. It's hard to put him in a starting position right now because you do have guys that proved themselves last year. Coughlin was hurt, but he did win Rookie of the Year. I still think he's one of our most solid hitters. He might find his way in the starting lineup. He'll definitely get some playing time this year. Chris Coughlin, born June 18, 1985 in Palm Harbor, Florida. He bats left and throws right. 6 feet tall, 205. He went to college, Mississippi. And his major league totals, 3 years, 19 homers, 10 triples, 71 doubles. So not bad for him. And the final guy I wanted to discuss is Heath Bell, our new closer. He's had a couple of monster years, last few, born September 29th, 1977, from Oceanside, California. Went to Rancho Santiago Community College. Bats right, throws right. 6'3", 260, 34 years of age. His career totals, he had 8 years, 3 with the Mets, 5 with the San Diego Padres, 134 saves, 306 ERA, 482 innings pitched. He's not a young buck anymore, but he's a perfect balance of quality and experience. So hopefully he could fill that void left by Leo Nunez. As your Marlins players, I'm not sure if there's any spring training games left. I know there's two exhibition games, the 1st and the 2nd of April, next week. Season kicks off April 4th. I will be there against the Cardinals. It'll also be on ESPN, which I kind of got excited when I heard about the ESPN part, but then it doesn't really matter what it's broadcasting on because I'll be in the seats. I have not seen the new stadium yet, and I'm pretty excited to do so. Wish me luck. I should be going to about 20-25 games this year. The Dolphins, they've been horrible, but everybody else in South Florida is doing well. The Panthers are on their way to the playoffs. The Heat obviously have a legit shot at the title. The Marlins have a really, really good shot at making the playoffs this year. What happens, you had 4 playoff spots in the AL, you had 3 divisions in each league. The difference is now, obviously the division winners make the playoffs. And then whoever is the best team left from the rest of the field wins the wild card. And that wild card is in the playoffs and they play a full 5-game series. Well, now it's a lot different. Now the top 2 teams left in the group get to play each other as a 1-game playoff. So if you win the wild card, you know, like you normally do, you get the fourth seed. You don't get a five-game series. You get a one-game series against the fifth-best team. Then it's like a normal playoffs, and they battle the one seed. Unless that one seed, of course, is their division, is in their division, then they play the two seed. But then it just goes on like regular playoffs. Other news, I haven't talked about it in a while. Last year and for quite a while, there's been 16 teams in the NL and 14 in the AL. They're in the NL Central, there's six teams. AL West is four teams. But now that's all changed. One of the teams, which is the Houston Astros, is now in the AL West. So now there's five teams in each division, 15 in each conference, league. I don't know, my mind's on football and basketball. But what this does now is when there's an even amount of teams, you only play your league all out throughout the year. So every day you're going to have an AL versus an NL matchup. Such an MLB update. I really haven't been watching too much of the Marlins in the preseason spring training. They haven't been on TV that much. And, there's enough games in the regular season for me to watch. So when it turns to be April 4th and April 5th, I'll be watching them almost every night. Well, as I always try to do, I have your top three plays of the prior week of sports. And I'm going to kick it off with a bad game, but a great play by yours only, D.D. Wade.
That second free throw is knocked down. Final seconds of the third, and here's Wade. Got it! A third three of the quarter, and that one in spectacular fashion by Dwayne Wade to put an exclamation point at the end of this one. That wasn't a heave. That was a shot from the chest by Dwayne Wade. Watch this. It's about 68 feet.
Yeah, it was just a bad game. They played against the Thunder. Thunder won. Heat lost. I don't understand. I mean, they're 6-4 now in their last 10. I guess they're 7-4 now in the last 11 because they won today. Just moving on to my number two play. Here it is.
Luol Deng, Korver, and Boozer. Luol Deng. On a handoff back to C.J. Watson. Watson attacking. Did it leave in time? They're saying that it goes. They're going to review it, though. The Bulls are acting as if it went. They're going to review it. It's going to be reviewed. Here comes Scott Foster over to review it. If it's good, the Bulls win. 102-101. Tremendous pressure on the ball. Luol Deng.
Oh, Matt. That was close right there, but it looks like that ball was just out of his hands, barely out of his hands, before the lights came on. We're going to take a look one more time. Catches it right now. Let's see if it leaves his hands before that light goes on. And there it is. It's out of his hands now, and the light goes on. Boy, it's close.
And they're going to count it. What a hard-fought battle.
Yeah, that was a great play. Can't say enough about the Bulls. Without Derrick Rose, their MVP, they're still winning games. That one, actually, that game that they won, clinched the playoffs for them. I mean, that's an important deal, even though, of course, they're going to make the playoffs, but to clinch in dramatic fashion is pretty cool. And here's the number one play. Without further ado, here he is.
Just one little brief word of caution. Third meeting of the year between them.
Slam dunk! And they're smiling at Staples Center.
And I'm telling you, Blake is smiling.
Here he goes again.
Look out! You'll get it back.
Yeah, just a high fly. I'll say this, that because it has been said before, he was kind of holding the guy's arm back, but either way, it was on Channing Frye, and was, I don't know, Channing Frye is not that big. Blake's just a beast. And that's your top three plays. Just really quick to wrap things up, just a quick South Florida recap. Your South Florida sports update. Like I said, the Marlins debut April 4th against the championship, the World Series winning St. Louis Cardinals. It's a one-game series. The first and the second are preseason games. It's going to be exhibition games at the new ballpark against the Yanks. The Heat, they won today against the team that beat them in the finals last year, the Dallas Mavericks. Beat them by 21 points. They're playing good. I think they're still playing good. I mean, last couple before this game, but they're playing pretty good. They're two back in the lost column of the Bulls. The Heat were second seed last year, and they overcame beating the Bulls in a seven-game series. The Heat need to just get that first seed. It's going to make everything so much easier. But if they end up with the second seed, they're going to be okay. Dolphins acquired David Garrard last week. Matt Moore is still the starter for now. They waived Jeremiah Bell, defensive back, from talks around. I just heard that he was getting old. They might re-sign him for a smaller contract. And the Florida Panthers, the Zen Man said it, they're on the way to the playoffs. It's not guaranteed, but they're definitely going to go. I am knocking on wood, but currently have a 3-point lead over the Washington Capitals. They're the third seed. They're going to stay the third seed unless a division team overtakes them, and that's the Capitals. Capitals with an overtime win, and the Panthers with an overtime loss. So Washington gained 1 point on them. But Panthers still obviously control their own destiny, so hopefully they can keep it up. And just my final thought, I guess I'll talk about baseball. It's kind of snuck up on me. It's been such an interesting NBA season and NFL season. And with the NBA season playing so condensed and fitting all these games in one after the other, it's kind of hard to keep your mind off of that. Plus March Madness. It's kind of all been fast-paced. A lot of people don't like baseball because of the reason that it's not fast-paced. It's very slow. I love it. It is the Zen Man's favorite sport to watch. As they have a new stadium, new players. Still have the old good players. Mike Stanton is going to be a beast this year. He's only 22. I mean, he's getting better every day. Their new pitching staff, just everything is coming together. Obviously, Jose Reyes. I mean, they have power. They have speed, youth, talent. I mean, this whole team is great. Veteran closer. They have all the pieces to win a title on. It's really tough to even think about, because they haven't really been that close to that throughout the last 4 years, 5 years. The last World Series was in 2003. But I do think that they have a legitimate shot at it this year. And I'm not saying that as a fan. Everybody on ESPN is saying they have a shot too. And my prediction is the Marlins actually, I think they're going to at least make it to the National League Championship Series. In my mind, I think they can win the World Series, but it's too tough to predict at this point, but I think they're definitely going to be in the playoffs at worst. And my prediction is at least the National League Championship Series. So we'll see. But just to wrap it up, I think the Marlins are going to make the playoffs this year. So keep watching them. They're going to be great. I think they're the best. I think they're just all around the pitching, defense, everything. They're good. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll definitely be back next Thursday night with another edition of the Sunbelt Sports Wrap at 11 o'clock on Ship to Shore Radio on blogtalkradio.com. With that, I wish you good night. Good luck to anybody's brackets that are left. Have a good night. I'll see you guys next Thursday. Thank you.
I am officially retiring from the NFL and Green Bay Packers. And
Breeze in the air to center. Has he done it?